Hello and welcome to Connectivity episode 286. I am your host, Alexander DeFreitas. I'm sure you're probably used to hearing John or Neil take over that hosting spot, but they are both gone. Perhaps decimated by some sort of Mushroom Kingdom themed virus. Maybe Buck Bumble, who knows? But I'm here with NWR staffer and aspiring medical student Xander Morningstar.
I'm here to cure the viruses. Hello. Hello, Alex. Thank you for having me. Great name, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. You know, if we combine my Alex and your Xander, we can both be Alexander.
It's true, yeah. DeFreitas Star.
DeFreitas Star.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a horrifying. We just combine the two of us into one being.
Yeah. Then we just become John and Neil.
So, speaking of John and Neil, they are, of course, suffering from a Mushroom Kingdom virus, as we have stated before. And you're working on finding a cure for that.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen them come through the clinic yet, but I am working on getting as many patients cured as possible. I've been playing Dr. Mario World, and some people might know that game is a mobile game that is ending its services on Halloween. Which is second anniversary, so they're basically killing Dr. Mario, and he's going to become a ghost on his birthday on Halloween. It's going to be great, but my goal is to try to beat the game, and I'm making some pretty decent progress. It's a really long road. There's like 1,240 levels, and I am currently on 451, I think. So I'm getting there, but I've got a long ways to go still, and yeah.
So this is a beatable mobile game.
Yeah, it is. I don't know if it was intended to be beatable. It is. Hopefully there's an ending. I really don't want it to be just you beat the last level and nothing happens. It's gotta be. Wow, that's pretty anticlimactic. Like, give me some sort of med license or something. I mean, that's the thing I've noticed is that everyone gets a medical license in this game. So I figure Dr. Sure. Morningstar has a pretentious ring to it. Maybe I'll pursue. Who knows?
Maybe Dr. Morningstar Tower.
Yeah, I did just unlock Dr. Goomba Tower. Which is, you know, that's one of those first few characters where people were like, okay, hold on. Wait a second. I'm waiting on Dr. Dolphin, though. That's the one I still want to get.
Why Dr. Dolphin?
It's a dolphin, man.
Fair point.
There are some things that I'm like, okay, you can unlock Dr. King Boo, but you can also unlock King Boo as his assistant nurse. So there's two King Boos, apparently. I don't know. I don't think they quite thought it through.
Is one of them like the real King Boo and the other one like the
no,
fake?
They look identical. That I would be more okay with if it were like two separate ones. Actually, I don't think I'd be okay with that either, but at least the artwork could be different. But no, it's one is just the JPEG of King Boo, and the other one is the exact same render, except he's got like a little satch on. So,
okay. Are there other characters that are just assistants?
So there's way more assistants than there are doctors, but there are quite a few doctors, and some of them are doubled up, like King Boo. I think Koopa, I want to say, is one of them. Pretty much the more generic Mario characters are the doctors.
Yeah.
All of the like there's a Thwomp assistant, which is just a picture of a Thwomp, or there's Queen Bee from Mario Galaxy, or Wiggler, or King Babomb. Some of them are a little more out there, like I don't know, the new Super Mario Brothers Crow is one of them. It's just like, okay, interesting. Or the Bruiser, which is that purple ghost with red boxing gloves. That's another one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting for sure.
Is Smoldering Stew a part of it?
No, Smoldering Stew is not, unfortunately.
That's very unfortunate.
There's one that looks like him. It's an alien Goomba. I forget its name, but it's like the little blue and yellow Goombas from Mario Galaxy. They kind of look like Smoldering Stew, but...
Gotcha.
Yeah, rest in peace, Smoldering Stew. Bring him back.
Yeah.
He deserves his medical license.
I'm a big fan of Smoldering Stew.
Yeah, and if people don't know who that is... What was that when I was streaming? Where did that come from?
You were playing Toadstool Tour on stream.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And there's like a, you know, you couldn't actually see who you were playing against, but there would be a list of
Yeah, he was on the leaderboard.
Yeah,
I was like, who the heck is Smolder and Stew? And
yeah,
someone take my Sunshine badge away for me, because that's a character from Super Mario Sunshine, which I think I guessed. I was like, well, Stew is the name of Stolen Stew, but I don't remember a Smoldering Stew. But there's
multiple versions of Stew.
Yeah,
it's pretty great.
I just would have put like Strolling Stew on fire, but no, it's a different character.
So to kind of just circle back, what is Dr. Mario World and how does it play differently from Dr. Mario, the game that everybody else kind of knows?
Yeah, it's pretty much backwards Dr. Mario. Traditionally you have all the viruses in the jar, kind of like Tetris, and they're at the bottom, and then Dr. Mario throws a capsule in and you navigate it downwards to try to match it up with the viruses. And I'm so used to playing this game, I think you have to match 4 in proper Dr. Mario to eliminate all the viruses, whereas in this one it's match 3, and it's backwards. All the viruses are at the top of the screen and all the capsules start at the bottom and you drag them up. But if you let go, then they are going to slowly fall upwards, or I guess float upwards would be better, until they land, and then you can't move them once they've landed. If you're quick enough, you can like drag a few to at the very beginning and let them slowly float up, and then you can like move a future capsule that you would get up above it, so that you kind of like control how things are going to fall. And that's kind of the game, is trying to optimize how these capsules are going to line up. You want, they're color coded, so you want to match the reds with the reds, blues with the blues. And the capsules, kind of like in Dr. Mario, they have two sides to them. So it doesn't have to be just a fully blue capsule. It could be blue and red. And if you match the blue end of the capsule up with the blue viruses and it dies, then the red portion is just the half. You can move that freely. That's kind of the basics of like how it works. But it feels like every few levels they have added some new diabolical, horrible way to make the gameplay even worse. And I say worse, but more strategic, I should say.
Okay.
So sometimes they have these coins you have to find. Sometimes, mm-hmm. Sometimes the missions aren't just to kill all the viruses. Sometimes it's find all the hidden coins, and sometimes the coins can be in viruses or they can be in blocks, and blocks are kind of like viruses, except they don't have a color. They're just a block. So you have to basically match 3 up adjacent to the block to make it break. Or sometimes they're frozen and it takes multiple hits to break the frozen blocks. Or there's cannons, and if you do a match 3 on them, then they'll shoot a cannonball all the way across the screen. There's bubbles, and if they're basically the bubbles means it will always whatever's inside the bubble will always float upwards. So if there's a virus in it and there's nothing in its way, then it's going to float upwards, and that can kind of get in your way if there's something at the top of the screen that you were hoping to get to. Lots and lots of stuff like that. So like I said, they have added quite a few ways to make it worse, and I'm only on level 451 at this point of the over 1200, so I'm only like a over third of the 1200. Way through. Yeah, it's over 1200.
So do you know the exact number?
Yeah, 1240, that's the final level. They just added it last week. 1240
minus how much have you already done?
451. So I think I've got like what, 749, I think.
789. There are 74 days till Halloween, which is when
it's
this
about
game...
11 levels a day is what I think the math was when I started. And I've been pretty good at it. The first like 100 are a joke. You fly through those pretty quick because it's so tutorial based.
Mm-hmm.
There is one thing that they've added that is making this a godsend, and I don't think I could beat the game without it. And that is called Power Boost. So if you beat a level, and there's like a requirement to do it, but I think if you beat the level under a certain number of capsules, you basically unlock Power Boost mode, and you can turn it off if you don't want to. I think the Dr. Mario World purists might hate it, I guess, because whenever I've like gotten stuck and I've looked up a guide, all the like pro gamer YouTube videos are no boost in parentheses. So I guess I'm the one cheating, but it's in the game. I'm using it because it's helping me.
How is it a cheat?
So what it is when you beat a level, you basically go up a tier in terms of the Power Boost's ability. So the first thing you'll get is you'll start off with three rainbow capsules, and rainbow capsules are just like the catch-all. They can match to anything, so they're very helpful, like, to kind of give you a head start. If you beat a second level consecutively, then you get that first tier, and then you go up and get a second tier, and that is you get whatever special ability your doctor has that you're bringing into the level with you from the get-go. So basically, you're starting off with the rainbow capsules and that special ability. And then I think the third one is you get like five or six extra capsules, because there's a limit to how many capsules you have for each level. If you run out, then you have to either pay the premium currency, which they don't sell anymore because the game is going to be canceled.
Yeah.
So basically, if you were to get three levels beaten consecutively, you would have all three tiers that the power boost can help you, and that just makes it so much easier to get some of the BS. But the catch is, if you lose once, then you lose all of it, and you have to start all over, and that's tragic, because you're going into these levels blind. You don't know what's waiting for you. They have like a little tag at the bottom, at the very top of each level's preview, saying like, here's the kind of horrible stuff that's awaiting you, but they don't show you like the actual configuration. Okay. They also do give you like a recommendation on like what the best doctors are to use, but I think it's sometimes a little misleading in how you use them. Like sometimes it'll have you say, oh, bring in Diddy Kong, and I'm sorry, Dr. Diddy Kong, excuse me. And I'm like, I don't know, I think Dr. Toad would be a better fit for this one, but okay. So it's like, if you don't get it on the first try and you lose your power boost, and then it's like, okay, well, now I know which doctor to bring in, but I've lost all my assistants. Yeah. It can be kind of annoying, and that's happened several times, but I mean, it's been a few weeks now, and I've gotten a third of the way through the game. I wouldn't recommend anyone do what I'm doing. I'm honestly this far in at this point that,
well, that leads into my question, which is like, as somebody who didn't really get past a tutorial, I don't feel the impulse to pick this game up. Yeah, and to everybody else who hasn't played it and might be listening after it's already closed, like, did we miss out? Was this a good game?
I wouldn't say it's a good game, but I am enjoying it. And I think when I've got all three of the power boosts, and it makes it easy to just kind of like, I wouldn't say cheese through the level, but it kind of like makes it feel a little more fair, because you can kind of glide through the BS that they give you right away. It's like a mobile mindless game. You can just kind of like turn your brain off or put a podcast on in the background and just kind of crank out a few levels. Like I said, my goal is 11 levels a day, or if I can't do that, just 100 levels a week. And I've been pretty good at that so far. I think I'm enjoying it in terms of like it being kind of relaxing, but it does become frustrating when you do hit a wall and you lose your power boost, or you don't have a recommended doctor, because some of the levels are kind of built with you getting a certain doctor in mind. And there's just sometimes like you just can't get the doctor that you need to pass. And so it kind of feels like you're trying to climb a wall with no supports on it, I guess, because there's no way for you to do it. And so you're just trying to see if what you do this time is any different at all than what you did last time. Like, sometimes I feel like I lose and I'm like, I feel like I did the best I could. Like, what was I supposed to do? They do have like the doctors available. Like that's kind of their gotcha system in the game, but it can be kind of hard to unlock them, because the only real way to get them now is to just kind of play every day. You can't buy the premium currency. And even if this game wasn't
being canceled, longer monetized.
Yeah, it's no longer monetized, but they still require the premium currency to unlock the doctors. And they're giving it out very slowly. Like, you get 10 of the, I think they're diamonds. You get 10 of them a day. But I've kind of like, they haven't done that in a few days now. I don't know if they're doing a current login bonus. But if you, if you complete a world, then they'll give you like a little fast pass ticket that lets you summon a doctor, or it gives you a chance to summon something. Usually it's an assistant, but if you're lucky, it could be a doctor. And assistants are just like little perks that help you, like, oh, let's start, remove two capsules at the beginning or whatever. It's cute, but I feel like I've kind of covered Dr. Mario World. Do you have any questions about that? I guess see me in a few weeks to see if I'm still breathing.
Hopefully you will have defeated the game before. But it seems like there's like surmounting challenges. Like it gets more difficult or more tricky as the more you play. And so, you know, you're a third of the way in. Who knows what the second, third, or the final stretch might have for you.
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of dreading what else they have because I'm always kind of like, whenever I see the preview, that screen that shows me like what's waiting for me behind the door, I'm always like holding it my breath because it can be kind of nerve wracking, especially when you have all three of the power boosts.
Yeah, and these mobile, puzzle games, they kind of live and die by the stamina. Like they just wanted you to keep playing, and then they want to punish you for like playing poorly or trying to get you to pay for extra time or extra stamina to keep playing.
Yeah, I don't know why they kept the stamina. Like, I know they got rid of the premium currency, but I don't understand the concept of having the stamina meter then, because there's no way to... Like, you can't buy more stamina, but you have to use the premium currency. But, like, there's no reason to have it if you can't actually pay anything.
Yeah.
They said that if you bought anything before the announcement of the closure, then they'll just give you unlimited stamina. And I did not buy, not give a dime to this game before they announced its closure. So I was like, I guess I missed out on that. But honestly, like, even though I missed out on it, it hasn't been too big of a problem. There's only been a handful of times where I've like genuinely run out of stamina. And that's kind of when I started like asking some friends and people in the Discord, like, hey, can you, if you're willing to like send me some hearts, cause you'd be awesome. But I put up all my progress on Twitter. If you're interested, I've got like, a little graphic.
And that's at Morning Shark.
Yep. That's me.
And people can then add you and send you hearts. And follow your journey as you try and beat a mobile game that was never supposed to be beaten in the first place.
Yeah, and I'm recording the whole thing for NWR's library, so we'll forever have a horribly long, sad playthrough of me losing my mind. There's no face cam, it's raw gameplay, but I'm sure if there was a face cam, it would probably be more of a psychological experiment of a man kind of losing his mind. Yeah, it's kind of sad the more I talk about it.
Well, that's kind of cool that we're going to always gonna have at least one playthrough so that people know that this game exists.
Yeah, and it's got some cute flair to it. I wish it would do a little bit more because it can get kind of generic at times. But like there's 31 worlds and one of them was based on Super Mario Galaxy. It was very cute. You just like there wasn't like much flair to it other than like just the visuals, but the fact that like they put that effort into it's neat. I'm in a Candyland looking area. It kind of looks like something from, is there a Mario Kart level based on like cookies and I want to say the ribbon level, but there's like lots of macaroons and cupcakes and stuff everywhere.
Is this Super Mario Kart that had a lot of like candy or food themed?
Okay, well that's where I'm at right now.
Okay, good to know.
But I'm only a third of the way through and I just beat the Bowser's Castle area. So I don't know what else they got in store, but
yeah. I mean, personally, you know, you hate to see a game just kind of die, but this kind of tells me that they're either reevaluating their mobile offerings at Nintendo or maybe just sunsetting a lot of the ones that aren't working and maybe just focusing on the ones that do and maybe not expanding much more past that. I know that when they did announce that they're going to start doing mobile games, you know, it was a scary proposition to see Nintendo, our favorite developer and publisher, step their toes into, I don't want to call it like bad games, but the games predatory. That are designed. Yeah, they're predatory or games that are just designed to be like time wasters rather than fulfilling gaming experiences.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at like a chart of like the amount of revenue that these games have made, and like Dr. Mario World is in dead last place, only 4.8 million, whereas Fire Emblem Heroes is a behemoth at 656 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it makes sense that they would kind of be that the second and last place is Super Mario Run at 76 million. So it's like the difference between 76 and 4.8, it's pretty big.
Right.
So I guess it makes sense. I honestly, though, like, I kind of do wish that, like, there would become a version of this game that is not cleaned up, but, like, the mobile aspect of it is taken out, because I think there is kind of a fun game here that's mindless. I wouldn't call it, like, a good game, but, like, it's a puzzle game at the end of the day. And so if you could somehow doll out the doctors that you need somehow, that isn't the gotcha system, maybe you rearrange the levels in a way that makes sense progression wise. I think that could be fun, but yeah, it's being sunset for sure. And I wouldn't mind it if they sunset some of the other games. Like, I could talk about the mobile games for a while, 'cause I play, Mario Kart Tour and Pocket Camp and Fire Emblem. I play all of them. And, it's just, on one hand, it's nice to have one of them disappearing off of my little checkbox, my checklist of the day. But on the other hand, it's like, it kind of stinks that, like, the preservationist in me and many others is like, oh no, wait.
Yeah. Well, at least we'll have your Twitter thread and that full playthrough.
Yeah. For sure.
Pretty cool. So speaking of mobile, we definitely got a bunch of that in the recent Pokemon Presents. In fact, we've had a couple of events since our last normal connectivity episode, since last episode was the Metroid Game Club, Metroid 2, Samus Returns, AM2R discussion. So we actually didn't discuss the indie world, but now we've kind of have two events to talk about. We've got the Pokemon Presents and we've got the indie world, and we're going to start off with the Pokemon Presents. And listener, I'll be honest, I don't have a whole lot of opinions on Pokemon in general. And the first, I don't know, like 10 minutes of this presentation was just mobile updates. And there was a moment where, like, my eyes glazed over as they were talking about the new version of, like, Pokemon Cafe.
Yeah.
But there's also, like, cool stuff coming out with Unite. I played a little bit of Unite, and it's a decent little simple MOBA that isn't as sweaty as, like, League of Legends. So yeah. I'm happy that's getting some support. Pokemon Go having a 5-year anniversary update.
Gosh, can you believe it? It's 5 years.
I know, it's already been 5 years. That was my reaction to seeing that graphic.
That feels weird.
Yeah, it does. Do you have any reactions to the mobile updates?
No, like I was saying with the preservation stuff, instantly I was like, oh my gosh, I have to play Pokemon Cafe Mix before they completely change it. I actually think I did play a bit of it and record some stuff. I don't know if I ever, like, properly uploaded it to our library, but I did play it on the Switch for a while, and I thought, this is cute, but this seems really, like, easy and boring. Like, it wasn't even, like, a fun mindless thing. Like, with Dr. Mario, like, I feel like I'm, like, progressing, whereas with Cafe Mix, it was almost too obtuse. Like, it was, like, drawing circles around things, and I didn't get too far into it, so maybe they do make it harder, but I didn't think it was particularly I didn't come back to it. That game is actually on the Switch as well, it's not just mobile. I'm wondering if they're gonna, I'm assuming they're going to overhaul it on the Switch too. But yeah, I've never even opened up Pokemon Masters or.
Oh, that's right. That was also part of the presentation.
But yeah, Pokemon Go, I haven't played in a minute. I turn it on every so often just to kind of do, like, the little daily challenge. But I kind of got tired of doing the same thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. I usually play that game in the summertime, and now that I'm out of college, it's kind of harder to do it. You know, I walked everywhere on campus, so it was a very natural thing to just have.
Yeah.
I say that, and I'm very much looking forward to the Pikmin game. So we'll see if my tune changes once that comes out, and that's supposed to be coming out very soon. So we'll see. But yeah, it's quite literally, it's growing out of the ashes of Dr. Mario World, which is that's fun.
You know, yeah. they should have considered a Dr. Mario World remix.
Maybe that they should have done that, because I mean, they're not too separate.
They're both little puzzle games. But we also got some updates on Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure did.
Did you feel anything for those games? Because I actually never even played those back in the day. And I'm not incredibly impressed with what I'm seeing so far.
Yeah, it's not. I feel like this is a product that's being marketed to me because I did play those. That was like I played a few Pokemon games as a kid. But I probably spent the most time with Diamond. Like I probably put a few hundred hours into that as a kid. That was the one I played with all my friends, and I had all my, you know, there's always that one where you store everything that you have. You max out all the Pokemon, you have all your legendaries and everything. That was all on Diamond for me. And I was kind of like, I don't know if I really want to play. Like, I know you put the two games side by side. The Switch one looks better. But mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't really want to play it. It looks okay to me. And yeah. I was kind of hoping that it's more of just like, I want to play the next step of Pokemon. I don't really want to play just a remake of a game that I enjoyed a lot as a kid. I think I would be more enticed to if it was like a throwback, but you know, Pokemon has not changed that much.
Right.
And I don't think that's a very sacrilegious thing to say. I feel like a lot of people think that.
Yeah.
So the idea that they're doing a remake that's not that different from like their current games, just kind of weird to me. It's like, why not just, if you're going to touch it again, like why are you even like making it the old way? Like why not just make it a proper newer version? I don't know, it's weird. But
well, the fact that they're giving it to another developer, it probably means that they're just like, they need something more traditional while they work on Pokemon Legends Arceus.
Makes me wonder if like they're afraid that Pokemon Legends Arceus, like if it doesn't do well, at least we have the time old thing that always does well, like right before it. Yeah, I don't know. Just doesn't really do it for me. I will say, like, I followed that trailer pretty well because like I said, I grew up with that game, and mm-hmm. there were just a few things where I was kind of like, really, like that's a feature. Like they talk about the Union Room, which is like a place you can go to on the DS where you can basically connect to the internet and then find like a random pool of people that are also playing, and you can trade or battle with them, and that's it. And I'm like, they're calling this a feature in 2021. Like why? Yeah. It's like, why are you literally remaking the exact same thing that was on a 2007 game? It's very strange. But there's a few smaller additions, like the Underground has like, you could always decorate your secret base, and then depending on the decorations, now they have an area where you can find Pokemon that presumably were not in Diamond and Pearl originally, because that was only Gen 4, and they're on Gen like 100 now. So they can. I'm just kidding. They that's their secret way of putting in other Pokemon, which that's clever. But not really my thing.
Yeah, I saw all the updates, and I'm actually looking at the breakdown that Donald Terrio did for NWR, but yeah, I'm looking at this list, and you know, they've got the Grand Underground, they have clothing customization.
Yeah, that's new. Yeah, that was not in the original
Union Room.
Yeah, the Union Room. Wow.
Super contests have now been modified to include more rhythm game elements.
Yeah, it's like, okay, is that really what's new here? Is like, you added some Pokemon in the underground, you can now change your outfit. They brought back the Union Room, which I feel like that's getting swept under the rug. I feel like people are like, oh, cool, yeah, that's just another Pokemon feature. I'm like, guys, that's a menu in other games. Like, why are we? Okay.
Right.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
It's definitely underwhelming. At least between the two of us, that's what our response seems to be.
Yeah, but I mean, the game hasn't come out yet, so I guess it's like I have to kind of reserve judgment. But like,
sure,
it's okay to not like something or not be excited about something, and
right,
whatever. I wish I was excited for this, because, like I said, like this was the one I played as a kid, and I feel like they would market it towards people like myself, but maybe not.
And I've actually been waiting for that one Pokemon game that's going to convince me to jump back in. Because I think the last one I really played seriously was Pokemon X, and I didn't even like beat that one. But that was cool because it was a jump to 3D, and it felt fresh. And this, you know, Brilliant Diamond, Shining Pearl definitely don't feel fresh. And maybe because they're remasters or remakes.
Yeah.
They don't have to. Maybe it's just cool for those fans to like go back to that region and enjoy that story again. But
I feel like it's funny you say that. I feel like the X and Y era is probably the most disliked by the Pokemon community. Maybe Sword and Shield based on all the backlash, but sure. I feel like most people did not care for that. So that's interesting you say that.
I'm not saying that Pokemon X and Y were like good games, but they sold me on a new way to enjoy Pokemon. Because like you said, like many people have said, Pokemon just doesn't change from year to year, from generation to generation. It's all pretty standard and rote at this point. You know what you're getting into.
It's a literal evolution. It takes a long time for them to do anything different.
Maybe in a couple million years we'll actually see.
Maybe in a couple million years we'll have a Pokemon game that looks different.
Right. Yeah. But we do have a Pokemon Legends Arceus on its way. Mm-hmm. And I am more interested in this game, but I'm not sold on this game, if only because of
two things. Ugly.
Well, one is okay, so sometimes it's ugly and sometimes I really like what I see. It just depends on the shot and what assets are in the shot.
Yeah, it's like it's jumping between weird looking textures to weird lighting, and the style's kind of different depending on what's happening. It's weird.
I think I agree. It just seems like it's a jumbled mess of like some good ideas, but nothing's like working cohesively. Mm-hmm. I think that like, the character models and the Pokemon themselves look fine. I think they look pretty
good.
Sure,
yeah.
But the environments are a little
rough. I'm still kind of confused what the game is, even though they went pretty in depth with this one. It seems that like it's maybe this is just the starting of the game, but you're with a team of researchers that are new to the area that are definitely not Team Galactic's predecessor. And it seems like you are a newbie in this world with Team Galactic, and you're exploring the area. And I suspect that it's going to start off with like, okay, go find the primal version of Growlithe or whatever, the really hairy beard one, and then go capture it, bring it back, we'll study it, and then release or keep it, whatever. And they're gonna have you do that a few times, and like that's kind of like what the game is that you just kind of keep going to find these Pokemon, catch them, and bring them back. Like I guess that's the game loop, but crafting too. I don't know,
that was the thing that kind of threw me off, because I think, and it wasn't a mistake or an accident that people like thought this was going to be a Breath of the Wild style Pokemon game. They definitely,
the box art's the same as Breath of the Wild. Yeah. Like not hiding that.
There's a camera shot in the trailer, in that first trailer, that feels very familiar.
Yeah.
But it really seems like it's like you're not really exploring the world as much as you are going out doing like a mission in a part of this region, and then coming back and then reporting back to the professor,
mm-hmm.
or the Team Galactic people. And so it doesn't seem like you're like roughing it out in the wilderness as much and kind of making your own way. It seems more maybe like Monster Hunter style, where you take on a quest and you go out and you do it and then you come back. Mm-hmm. Of course, we don't know exactly if that's how it plays because the game isn't out yet. And we only got this trailer breakdown, and maybe I'm misinterpreting it, but that's what it seems like to me. And that just as a style of game is a lot less enticing, than actually exploring.
Yeah. Well, it's like Breath of the Wild, you know, it's a big game and it has a lot of things hidden around the world, but like when you look at like the types of things that are hidden, it really ain't that much. It's either a weapon, a Korok seed, or like an ingredient that you might need to craft something. It's not like it's always some secret grand treasure. Whereas I guess with what their opportunity here is, if it is like an exploration styled game, like you could have hidden boss fights around the world. You could have like the crafting materials I don't know what you, I guess you're crafting Pokeballs and potions and stuff. Like it's kind of like that survival aspect.
Yeah.
But like, I don't want to like constantly be seeing Zubats everywhere, you know, or really any Pokemon. Like I don't want it to be kind of consistent with just having a bunch of the same Pokemon in the same area. I guess visually it's fun to see like flocks of them, cause that makes it look more realistic. But like in terms of actual gameplay, that doesn't seem very fun. I guess the thrill of it in terms of it being exploration based, if you have just a bunch of new Pokemon that are all kind of like, this is the one spot where you find this Pokemon, and like that's that encounter. Maybe people wouldn't like that, but I feel like that would be more fun. I'm not really in love with like just seeing a bunch of like, I don't want to play a game where I'm just seeing and catching the same Pokemon that I've seen for 25 years, you know? Like,
yeah,
it was neat to see that they are going to do some variants. They showcased 5 or 6 of them in the trailer. That evolution of Stantler looks really cool, but yeah, I don't really think that that's probably what they're going to do, because if they've struggled with having nearly 1,000 Pokemon already, I can't imagine they're going to be pumping out a bunch of new variants, or at least like another 100 variants in this game.
Right.
But maybe they are. They do make some weird decisions. But yeah, I guess I'm not fully sure like what the game is. And if it is just like go out, craft things, survive, and collect Pokemon, like I guess I would like that more if I was new to Pokemon, because it would be like, it would be a literal discovery. Whereas with this, like,
yeah,
there can't be that many new creatures, right?
Right.
But who knows?
I guess the best way to play Pokemon is to just, you know, play it once every 10 years, because then it'll feel new to you.
Yeah, well, they come out with 10 games in that time.
Yes.
20 if you count, like, each double release.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I've always said, like, with when it comes to a new Pokemon game, I would prefer it if the Pokemon that are presented to you are all new and there aren't any repeats. Even if it means if it's like a smaller pool, I would rather have everything be brand new, because it gives that game an identity and it doesn't rely on things I've already seen before. It doesn't make it feel as stale.
Right.
Even though the formula might be the same, and that's a different conversation, at least like the creatures, which are like the focal point.
Yeah, the heart and soul of the franchise.
At least that is something that's new. And Black and White, I think, is the one that did it right by doing that. They didn't give you any of the older Pokemon until after you beat in the game, which my opinion is the right way to go. Because again, it gives it more of an identity. It makes it more memorable. And I don't think they're going to do that, because I think they already shown old Pokemon in this trailer, but again, I don't know. The game's not out yet. We'll see. I hope there's a story, if that matters. Like, I guess I've not really been wowed by Pokemon storytelling, but I hope there's something to kind of keep me coming back.
Sure. I will say that there are some cool things about what I saw in the trailer. The way that the Pokemon seem to move and react to you is a lot more interesting. And those new forms of Pokemon, I think, are really cool. That the Braviary, the Growlithe. So hopefully we see more of that. And interacting with Pokemon in a way that, you know, they feel more like wildlife than just cute RPG characters that you can collect. Yeah. That's pretty cool. So hopefully there's more of that to see and more variety with that. Like, hopefully it's not just all the birds act the same, all the small cute mammals act the same.
I mean, it's one thing species. For like them to have like behaviors that are similar, sure. But there's another thing for them to be like, I feel like they're animatronics in that regard. Yeah. You know, like you don't want it to be like, okay, it's gonna do this. Oh, I was right. You know, like you want to, even if it's just them flying, like I don't care if you eventually see the circle on the map of their flight pattern. Like I would just kind of want it to be a little bit more immersive. At the end of the day, though, it's not going to be what you expect from like new Pokemon Snap. You know, like this is an open world game, I think, ?
Yeah.
It's not going to be an on rails experience. You know, animators have so much more control and probably a lot more fun with games like new Pokemon Snap, because they can limit where the player is at all times. So they can control what you're seeing. Whereas with this one, it's a lot harder and a lot more ambitious. So I don't expect that quality, and I don't think anyone should in terms of like the immersive aspect of it. But, you know, if you are creating a game where the whole point is to explore the wilderness and then catch Pokemon, you do want to have some effort to make it feel believable. They have that thing where their eyes are glowing red, like a, I don't know if it's like the blood moon from Breath of the Wild's back or what, but they seem to like have some sort of like beast mode or they all go bad. So
yeah, is it like a time of day sort of thing where...
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's like there are areas where they all become super powerful and you can't go there yet. Maybe that's their way of gatekeeping. Gotcha. I don't know. Or maybe they're like savages. Like they're going primal. Like they're the cute little Pikachu is suddenly like unsafe to be around and something's causing that. I don't know.
They could do the Princess Mononoke plot where nature's being corrupted by some evil force.
Yes, yeah. I was thinking Zootopia, but yes, that also works. When it comes to like the story, it's like Pokemon storytelling's never been super deep, but sometimes they decide to go like incredibly I don't know if ambitious is the word, but they go too big with it. You know, Diamond and Pearl is like probably when that really, really started. You know, with the whole like trying to undo reality and create a new reality or whatever. And right. Then they were
Space and time and, yeah, and literal Pokemon time. God.
And that's the name of this Pokemon game is literally the Pokemon right. God, which is like, if you're going to do it, like Pokemon lore, I know it's silly to talk about, but like it's always felt like Pokemon, it does not care about its own lore. It's just there as flavor text. So if you're going to actually call this game Pokemon Arceus or Legends Arceus, like you do need to care about that because it's in the name of the game. Like that's kind of like you're setting a precedent for yourself.
It does seem like this game cares a little bit more about its lore than others because it's, you know, it's kind of like the origins of the Pokedex because you're filling it out. It seems like they're filling it out basically by hand this time. It's like really old style Pokeballs.
Yeah,
there's some cool things going on, maybe visually, especially with the oh, I don't know what kind of period of Japan this is kind of
like. I don't know, is feudal the right word? I'm not really familiar with the eras of Japanese culture.
Sure, I think feudal is probably the right word. But that whole style.
Let us know.
Yes, please correct me if I'm wrong. That whole style seems to, you know, and using that to kind of visualize an early version of the Pokemon that we know and love today. I mean, love question mark.
Still brings a lot of kids happiness and that brings a lot of adults happiness.
But for the two of us,
I know what you mean.
We're a little bit more rocky.
I come across very jaded and it's not like I'm like unhappy. I just haven't really cared because I haven't really been impressed with the last few games that I've played. So I'm fine with not playing it, you know.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to read or watch the review when it comes out.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's one to keep your eye on for sure. Because like at the end of the day, like we made the joke about Pokemon being slow to evolve. Like at least they're trying something new here. It seems to be kind of clunky in like its messaging. Maybe some people will disagree with that, but yeah, I'm still kind of unsure of like what this game is. Are there gonna be dungeons? Like is this like a Zelda where like you have to have a team of Pokemon that can do a certain thing and like those are your items? I don't know. That would be cool,
right?
That would also honestly, like, that would be kind of a neat thing where like they do have a limited pool of Pokemon available to you and you need to get the one to get you into this area. Maybe people would hate that because it would be like so situational. Yeah, it would be such gating. And also it'd be kind of like in Paper Mario where you have to have like the exact thing item to progress. Like maybe people wouldn't like that. But maybe there's a concept there. I don't know.
Or like maybe like the items or the runes in Zelda.
Yeah, that would be neat. Like okay, you don't collect the Pokemon and keep them for yourself. You collect them so you can get the Pokedex data for your team, and that's how you learn about them. But you're only given like a small team of Pokemon. And in that way, it's not necessarily like you're creating your party. It's you just have a party of characters available to you that you are training. Like an actual RPG, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's not necessarily like picking your favorite and then training it. It's more of just like training the ones that you have and optimizing it how you'd like to. That'd be neat.
Yeah, there are some cool ideas here. And I will make the argument that it seems like ever since maybe Sword and Shield, or maybe Let's Go Eevee or Let's Go Pikachu, it seems like Game Freak has been like dipping their toes into what HD Pokemon is going to feel like.
Yeah, I just want to walk up behind them and like be the jerk that pushes them into the pool. Like, yeah, just do it already. Good grief.
Right, right. They've been dipping their toes for, you know, since like 2018 at this point.
Remember the wild area and how revolutionary that was? Like, yeah. Okay. Calm down, people.
And that's what Legend of Arceus feels like, is like, we're trying to make the wild area the game.
Fascinating concept, really. Yeah, no one's thought of that before.
But, you know, they're not going all in. This is a spinoff. This is kind of like a weirder formula. I don't know. I think we've kind of said our piece. Please let us know what y'all think. Hopefully, maybe y'all have a more positive spin. I'm definitely keeping an eye on it, but I'm not putting all my eggs in that basket.
Yeah.
So the presentation we had before this was Indie World. And I know that you, Xander, don't have a whole lot to say, but I'll just say that this was a really, really cool Indie World. I feel like a lot of interesting games were either announced or shadow dropped. Mm-hmm. Just the ones that kind of speak to me are like Tetris Effect Connected. That's a game that I've kind of had my eye on that I wanted to play, but I feel like it'd be really cool to play that on Switch with headphones. Mm-hmm. I enjoy Tetris, but I'm not hardcore, and that just seems like a cooler way to just experience that game. Have you ever played Tetris Effect?
I have not, no. I've never even won a game of Tetris 99, but I know that's not what this game is. It's more of a psychedelic visual experience.
And I don't like the competitive edge of 99. I just want to zone out and play Tetris, and I feel like this game was built for that.
Yeah.
So
I'm probably going to get this one. This whole Indie Direct was full of like, oh, wow, that's immediately going on my wish list.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's just a matter of like trying to prune which ones you're actually going to play. Right. Because there's a, you know, Metal Gear Slug Tactics. That's, you know, a tactics game. That's right up my alley. Eastward, which is this beautiful pixel art game with
drop dead gorgeous.
Beautiful.
I've kind of gotten fatigued of like pixel art, but man, that game is pretty.
Right. You kind of have to stand out if you're going to be like a throwback pixel art game. But Eastward, it's definitely one that takes pixel art to the next level. I think like Owlboy was probably the last one that felt like that to me.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And so I didn't love Owlboy, so I'm not sure if I'm going to pick Eastward day one. I might need to like wait for a review to see if that game kind of lives up to the look of it.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you what that game's about because the art style is the only thing I remember from the trailers.
Right, right. There's also Shovel Knight Pocket Dungeon, which is another puzzle game. Mm-hmm. Bomb Rush Cyberpunk is the one that I'm probably the most excited about because it's definitely, it's by Team Reptile. They did Lethal League, which is a fighting game. And if you've ever played that game and if you've ever played Jet Set Radio, you could definitely tell that they were picking up what Jet Set Radio was putting down. Just visually and the music, they were, those people are very much inspired by Jet Set Radio. And I played a little bit of Jet Set Radio earlier this year, and I love the look and the sound of that game, but it's just so dated. It plays so clunkily. It's, you know, it's a Dreamcast game. It doesn't have a second analog stick. And the movement isn't as fluid as it should be, considering it's a platforming game where you're skating around, tagging graffiti on walls, running away from law enforcement. It didn't play as well as I wanted it to, but I still was really into the style. And so hopefully Bomb Rush Cyberpunk will like deliver on the look and feel, but also the controls and gameplay, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I understand.
So those are the games that kind of just sprung out to me, but we also got a ton of shadow drops. We had Axiom Verge 2, Necro Barista Final Pour, Garden Story, Islanders Console Edition, Slime Rancher Portable Edition, and Curious Expedition 2.
Cool.
Yeah, it's cool. However, it's like too many, right? Yeah. There's probably some diminishing returns whenever you announce this many indie games to be kind of dropped on your lap. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. there's probably a different market for each game. But as somebody who loves to play indie games and is always like looking out for the next one, I actually like forgot about a couple of these, and some of them actually looked pretty good. Like, I might play Islanders Console Edition or Slime Rancher, but because they were all kind of barraged at me, I only kind of remembered Axiom Verge 2 and Necrobarista. And then Garden Story.
Yeah, I was expecting Guard Story and Axiom Verge 2 to be the ones that kind of overshadow everything else.
Yeah, well, Garden Story, I only really remember that because I'm helping out with the video review of that. And and that's basically it's like a Link to the Past city builder kind of game. Not city builder, it's more, you know, crafting, and you're building back up these locations that have been ravaged by some evil force called the Rot. And it's just, it's a little sluggish. It's gorgeous. It sounds great. It's one of those, you know, it's the kind of thing that kind of has me a little concerned about Eastward, because when you look at it and you think, oh, this looks really, really pleasant. But then you play it and it's just not as good as you would like it to be.
Yeah, art styles, as great as they are, like, gosh, it's kind of a whole discussion in itself, but like, it can be deceptive in terms of like hiding the gameplay. I played and reviewed, what was the name of that game? It was, it looked like a Rankin based cartoon. It was Takashi and Hiroshi, I want to say. It's two brothers.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was like claymation.
It was all, claymation. And it was really pretty. The claymation bits are great, but like, boy, oh boy, the game does not look like that all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just like what they're marketing and what you're actually going to be playing most of the time. It kind of comes across like a mobile game where it's like you play like the fun, addicting puzzle for a moment, and then like, actually, here's the match three portion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Garden Story was, it's a bit of a letdown. I hate to say it. And according to Jordan's review, he didn't exactly love it either. The combat is just, it does this really bad thing where you kind of have a lot of end lag on your attacks, at least early on, and you also run out of stamina pretty quickly. So there's a lot of like trying to get your swipes in and then backing off, which is made worse because the enemies, a lot of them, when you do finally kill them, they'll have like a little bit of a lingering bit where you'll have to kill off the little slime that's left over, because that can also hit you. And then there's others that have a little bit that's left over that will explode. If you've ever played Overwatch and played against a Junkrat, whenever a Junkrat dies, he'll leave a bomb behind and then that will explode.
Gotcha.
Very annoying, because it just means that you're always playing combat where you're getting your couple swipes in, and with the end lag, it just doesn't feel good because you're getting your swipes in and then you're backing off, getting your swipes in and you're backing off. Whereas with like A Link to the Past or any other traditional top-down Zelda game, so the combat's pretty quick and accessible. It's never like involved, but it doesn't have to be. It just needs to feel good in the moment. And Garden Story, unfortunately, doesn't really feel good in the moment. And the crafting in Garden Story isn't particularly creative or interesting. It just feels like you're just gathering resources. But you know, it looks and sounds nice, so it's not the worst thing. It's just really hard to recommend.
They can't all be the best.
No, they can't. Of course, I think probably the biggest shadow drop was Axiom Verge 2, but I don't really need to say much because I'm sure Neil will say plenty.
Yeah, I have nothing to say on this. I know it's, I hear this, the first name of the game, the first one, all the time.
And yeah.
I feel like it's got a reputation, even though I've never even played it. And I think it's a really cool Metroidvania. That's what I hear. So,
I mean, when it comes to indie Metroidvanias, there's a ton of them, but like the couple of names that you hear the most often are going to be like Axiom Verge and Hollow Knight. So yeah. It definitely has a lot of prestige.
Yeah. The only game I'm like really wanting to play right now, which I thought had a demo, but apparently the demo is only on Steam. So maybe it'll come to Switch eventually, is Toem, which is like that photography game that's monochromatic. And I like taking pictures, and I thought that looked kind of, I was both kind of like, oh man, I don't know if I'd enjoy that. Cause it's like, I don't want to take pictures in Box Boy World. Like that doesn't seem like that doesn't really do it for me. But at the same time, I'm like, that looks very creative in terms of like what the game is. And I liked Pokemon Snap. So I want to give that game a shot.
I'm not sure if it's the kind of game that I'm going to pick up immediately, but it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, if it's a photography game, it's probably endless. But like, if it's like got a campaign to it, that's like an afternoon or two evenings, maybe. Yeah, I'd be down for that for sure.
Yeah, and we've definitely been seeing a lot of interesting photography games crop up. You know, obviously we've had new Pokemon Snap this year. We've had Toem, Umuranagi Generation, I think is the name of that.
Okay.
The other game, I think Willem did the review for that one. So it definitely seems like photography games are making a comeback from the old Pokemon Snap days. I mean, there really wasn't like a heyday for photography games, I don't think.
No, unfortunately. But I think we're approaching the heyday of photo mode, which I'm fully here for. Like, bring sure. it on.
Yeah, so photo mode, of course, is probably what's making these photography games a lot more interesting for developers to work on, because having a photo mode, having it be shareable on the internet makes it more of a community experience to see like how people are enjoying these games and exploring these worlds. So you've done a lot with photo modes, especially with Animal Crossing, right?
Yes, I have. I've dabbled with that for sure. It's actually where I spend most of my time now playing that game.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your what projects you're working on, what you've done in the past, and what you're working on currently.
Yeah. So, you know, Animal Crossing, it's a game that doesn't know what kind of game it is. It's constantly changing its genre. I shouldn't say constantly. Over the course of like your long time playing it, like, you know, especially with this latest one, you know, kind of cultivating the land, and then you're decorating it, and then you're kind of running out of things to do. So you start working on the achievements list, or you just kind of enjoy it for what it is. I am still trying to like kind of make sure I kind of get everything, not because I care about having everything, but I care more about being able to have every tool available to me in terms of like using it as a photo mode at this point. Because I really do spend, like, I don't decorate my island anymore. I would like to. I really enjoy, like, that's probably my favorite part of Animal Crossing on the Switch, is that you can decorate outside. It's such a slow, tedious process that I don't Right. really enjoy doing it anymore. So now that I've like decked it out and I've got it to a point where there's nothing else, there's no more space for me, I don't really want to tear anything down and go through the hassle of trying to build other things, even though I know it would refreshen the experience for myself just because it takes so much time. But I've had a lot more fun going to Harv's Island. Harvey, the dog, you know, he's got like his own little photopia island where you can basically go inside his cabin, and he's got 6 different rooms. And you can basically deck it out to however you'd like. And as long as you've had it in your catalog, at some point you've got access to it, and as many as you'd like. You can use the amiibo there to summon villagers, and you can just basically set up these little like photo shoots and take pictures with them. And when I started playing the game a year ago, I really like brushed this off because like that wasn't where my attention was at. My attention was building my island. But now that I've, again, where I'm at now, I'm like, this is pretty much all I'm doing now. And I really love doing it. It's there's no reward in the game for doing it. It's really just there for you. And I kind of love that. I find the reward is very satisfying once I kind of get it just the way I want it. And then I have that snapshot that I can share and have for myself. I do a lot of recreation stuff. I'll pick like a movie or a game or a show or something, and then I'll just try to reconstruct it in a way that is
translated to Animal Crossing, and it's not always necessarily one-to-one. Sometimes it is. The first one I did was Luigi's Mansion almost a year ago, which is crazy to think about, but I basically recreated every room in the mansion that has a portrait ghost in it, and then I edited it in a way that like had Luigi going through the mansion, kind of viewing it chronologically, and then I put that on NWR TV if you haven't seen it. And that was really fun. It was kind of ambitious. I haven't done anything that big since. I don't know if I ever want to again, just because it was a lot of work.
Right.
But doing that, though, spending so much time on that kind of opened the door for me, like realizing, like, wow, I could do other things with this as well. And so that's kind of what I've been doing. I've basically picked things and then tried recreating them, like, three or four or five moments from said thing and then recreating it. I've done a lot of Disney lately and I'm trying to get away from it. Not because I don't like it. Well, that not liking Disney is a whole other conversation. But I love the animation of Disney and they're really fun to try to mimic. So I literally just posted The Little Mermaid on Monday. But I've also done The Princess and the Frog. I did Alice in Wonderland, and I at some point would like to do Aladdin and Hercules. Like, I'm sure there's others I'll get to eventually, but I've also done Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, The Nightmare Before Christmas, which that's also Disney. What else? Oh, I did a bunch of Hanna-Barbera cartoons. So that was like The Smurfs, Scooby-Doo, Sinbad Jr. and the Magic Belt, The Flintstones, The Jetsons, Richie Rich.
How long does like one of these take you to do a set?
The mileage, I guess it really does vary. Sometimes it takes me a long time because I put a lot of effort into the pattern making.
Yeah.
Other times, not so much. Like the Flintstones one was actually pretty easy because there's a lot of caveman rustic stuff that I was able to pull from pretty quick. Whereas like the freaking Princess and the Frog, that one took me forever because I just had fun making patterns. That custom design editor, it's not perfect, but you can get away with a lot of fun stuff. I like to customize the outfits so they look as close as possible to the source material. Or sometimes if they don't have a thing that I want, then I'll just make it and hang it up. Like for the Jetsons, for instance, you know, that family from the future, they live in like a sky house that's like a big tower floating above like the smog. And I'm like, how do I recreate that? So what I did was I just chose like an all blue wallpaper to make it look like there were clouds. I think it was just the ocean view. So it was like you could see the ocean at the bottom, but then the rest of it was a cloudy sky. And then I put a sofa around the perimeter of the room to make it look kind of like big and elongated. Like no family would have in the modern day would have a sofa that goes around the entire perimeter of the room, but the Jetsons do.
That looks kind of sectional.
Yeah, literally a room-sized sectional. I guess some people do. You know what I mean. It looked silly. And then I created like a custom pattern where I drew colored stripes down a square, and I hung that up as like a canvas on the wall. And I did another one which matched where those stripes are, but then I drew like other buildings on top of those stripes to make it look like there were other towers in the distance, just to kind of like create like this you could tell it's like it's trying to be a depth of field-esque picture. I'm trying to play with perspective, but like at the end of the day you can also see that it's just a canvas on a wall. So it's kind of fun, like not trying to feel limited by making it one-to-one, like using Animal Crossing's limitations that people are familiar with and making something kind of fun out of it.
Yeah.
I don't think this is in the picture, but like the chocolate waterfall that I used for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is what I ended up doing was using the backside of a rock climbing wall, which is just like a bunch of wooden boards, but it's going down and it looks like it could be a chocolate waterfall. I think that's what I, because on my island, I actually kept that one. I rebuilt it on my island because I thought that one was, I liked that one a lot. Whereas I think in the picture, I just used brown canvases. So sometimes you think of ideas after you've already taken the picture and you've already posted it, but it's whatever.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It seems like it's a much more powerful tool than, because I didn't really mess around with it at all. I think I like walked into the room, took a couple pictures, and left.
Yeah, at this point, like, honestly, I know Animal Crossing is missing so much content, which is, it's a real tragedy. I've loved that series for so many years now, and seeing where it's at, it's like, you could do so much more.
Yeah.
But if I had my way, I actually think I would be down for a Happy Home Designer sequel, but I would want it to be like an island designer. You know, you go into God mode and you can just create several islands that you can share and post online, and then you can tour. Like, if you could just, like, tour in the Dream Suite a bunch of islands that people have made, so that way you can have your island and play it properly like Animal Crossing, but then you can also go into, like, the Dream World and explore dream islands that people have made. I would love that. I've got so many ideas that I would want to do. It's so hard, because it's so, I don't want to keep rebuilding my island over and over again. That takes so much time. So yeah, if they ever do that, I'm super into that, but we'll see.
Yeah, the photo modes are pretty cool, especially the more modern ones that kind of let you do a lot with stickers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the most interesting photo applications has been Breath of the Wild.
Oh, where, yeah?
Yeah, I think if you take a photo, you record an animal or some bit of flora or fauna, and it adds itself to the Hyrule Compendium.
Yeah.
So you could basically play that game, if you wanted to, just fill out the compendium as, like, mm-hmm. a zoologist, and just, yeah, like, try and record every single animal. And that, I kind of want to do a playthrough that's kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to, like, try and figure out a way to go back to that game without it feeling the same, because what I love about Breath of the Wild is the exploration, the discovery. So that's definitely kind of like on my bucket list of things to do.
Yeah, that's cool. I did not fill out the compendium. I did a lot of it, and there just kind of hit a point where I was it was more of a functional picture rather than like an artistic picture.
Right.
So I guess I wasn't enjoying it as much.
You're more documenting things than you are, like, yeah, trying to, you know, use the rule of thirds and blur it out. Yeah. Like, it's the Breath of the Wild's, like, photo mode isn't as maybe powerful as, like, Mario Odyssey's or whatever. Though you do get to do selfies with Link.
Yes, which that's is like a must.
Yes, which is a cool, like, holdover from Wind Waker, which if you got the Pictobox, you could kind of do two selfies, mm-hmm, at least in the HD version. I'm not sure if I'm recollecting.
Yeah, you gotta get that selfie with Ganondorf at the end. That's a must.
Yes, yep. It was so cool, like, run into the Miiverse bottles and mm-hmm, see other people's photos. Yeah, photo modes are pretty cool, and I'm excited about photography games and seeing what people are sharing online.
Yeah, I really enjoy them. You know, Mario Odyssey's got a good one. New Pokemon Snap's got a good one. Even some of the mobile games, like Mario Kart Tour, has a photo mode that they actually build into some of the challenges. Like, sometimes they'll say, if you want to get all three stars for your tour reward, you have to take a picture with at least two drivers doing a flip in this area of the map or something. Like, they put little challenges in
objective.
Yeah, I know. It's really, really specific, but, like, it changes for each one, and it's pretty fun. It entices you to use it. So I welcome all games having photo modes if possible, because I just have a lot of fun with them. You know, not every game I stick to as heavily. Animal Crossing's probably been the anomaly, but there's been a few others, like Mario Kart Tour, that I've definitely been putting up pictures. It's easier with Animal Crossing just because you have so much customization is the name of the game,
right?
You know, whereas with, I don't know, Mario Odyssey, like, you're limited to, like, the things that are already in the game and where they exist in the world. You can't really move them around too much. You can try to. There are, like, some of those captures and filters, but you know, Animal Crossing is a designer game too. So yeah, who knows?
Yeah, what I really like about engaging in photography within a video game and engaging in photography in real life is just, like, it gets you to slow down and pay more attention to what's around you,
mm-hmm,
and to kind of appreciate it more. Because all these worlds that we kind of visit within these games are, you know, they're really, like, fully fleshed out. A lot of them are, and these artists, digital artists, like, spend, you know, months, years of their life building them. And a lot of times you can kind of just blaze through them and not take note of all the details.
Yeah. You definitely have a lot more respect for how it's made once you've even just dabbling in something. Like, if you've never, like, if you've any interest in making a video game, you know, like, take a class in 3D modeling or some sort of coding class. I would recommend 3D modeling because, you know, I come from an animation visual effects background. That's just me. You know, I'm an artsy guy. But yeah, just take like a fundamentals course and you can see like all the work that goes into it. Like, just doing a character, you know, you have to have someone that sketches it. Then you have to put that sketch, like that concept sketch, into like a T-pose sketch, and then you have to model that, and then the model has to be rigged, and then the rig has to be animated, and it's like there's so many, and then there's all there's that's not to mention like just texturing work, you know, and that all the work that comes with that, like bump maps, normal maps, spec, the whole shebang of works, and like, well, not that you need to know this or you're being ignorant, but it's just like gamers don't need to know that stuff because they're the players, right? Like, they're just the ones experiencing what has been made. But like, once you like actually sit down and you've like learned a little bit of how that stuff made, it gives you so much more appreciation for all the smaller things. And I really dig that stuff for sure.
Yeah, that's neat. Well, I think we can call this an episode.
Yeah, we've covered a lot.
We sure have. Hopefully John Neal won't yell at me for screwing this up. But if you've enjoyed this episode, you can feel free to follow us at ConnectivityNWR on Twitter. If you've got any cool pictures in a photo mode of a game that you're playing, send those on over. And you can send in any questions at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
You won't be able to feature the photos on the podcast. So what you're going to do, you're going to have to describe in vivid detail everything that's sent to you.
And if you can't send us a picture on Twitter and you just want to send us an email, don't attach an image. Just describe it so that we can just verbalize it on the podcast.
Well, that's actually a real thing on Twitter. You can put alt text to describe what the picture is for the visually impaired.
Oh, so, yeah,
you
know, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be doing a service then.
Yeah.
Nice. If you have been interested in our Metroid deep dives, then you can join our Metroid Game Club that is on Discord. If you just go to our site and look for the chat button, then you will be directed to the Discord server. If you want to follow me, I'm at DeFritos. And Xander?
I am at Morning Shark.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.
Fire Rosalina.